20 years ago this week, Hurricane Katrina slammed into New Orleans and the Louisiana coast. A massive storm surge overwhelmed the city, bursting through levees and flood walls. 80% of New Orleans was left underwater. Entire neighborhoods were wiped out. NPR's Greg Allen looks back at one of the country's worst ever disasters and asks whether any lessons have been learned.
On a quiet street in New Orleans' Gentilly neighborhood, a small brick house stands as a testament to the lasting impact Hurricane Katrina had on New Orleans and its people.
Come on in. As you look to the left, you'll see one of the trademark X's. These were put here by first responders. Each symbol has a meaning. This is the date. This says September 22nd.
Sandy Rosenthal is with levees.org, a group that has preserved this house. No one died here, but hundreds did in other homes throughout the city when the levees failed. Others struggled to their rooftops to escape the rising water, as heard here in a rescue.
Come on, you can do it. Let go.
Don't panic. Just come to us. Once you get to us, we can get...
The official death toll from Hurricane Katrina, once thought to be 1,800, was revised down to 1,400 2 years ago after a new analysis of death reports. We walk a few doors down where Rosenthal's group has an outdoors exhibit with a Hurricane Katrina timeline and a garden, marking the location of a major levee breach on the London Avenue Canal.
A monolith that's a 20-foot section of flood wall broke, and unleashing Niagara Falls into this neighborhood. The home that was on this footprint that you see here, the entire home was picked up, carried out into the street.
Several miles away in another part of New Orleans, the Lower Ninth Ward, Robert Green has kept another reminder of the events 20 years ago, a short concrete staircase.
These steps are the only thing that we have of my mother's house.
The home is gone, washed away when floodwalls on New Orleans Industrial Canal, just a few blocks away, toppled over. Green says within minutes, the floodwaters rose up to the second floor.
We had 5 minutes to get from the inside of the house into the attic. My brother kicked a hole in it. We get on top the roof, so we figure we're high enough, but then the house lifted off its foundation.
Green was on the roof with his brother, cousin, mother, and three grandchildren under the age of five when the house began floating. It moved down the street, and his family were able to scramble onto another, more stable structure.
We ended up on somebody else's roof. At that particular time, I put my granddaughter, Shanae, on the roof, turned around to get her two sisters, turned around, and she disappeared. So she fell in 25 feet of raging water. We were fighting the storm surge. We weren't fighting Hurricane Katrina.
It ranks among the deadliest floods in U.S. history. But it was a disaster that many had long feared and predicted. In 2002, 3 years before the storm, journalist Mark Schlefstein and another reporter with the New Orleans Times-Picayune wrote a 10-part series on the conditions that made the city vulnerable to flooding. One especially chilling story was titled, The Big One.
What we explained was that the city would flood. There would be dramatic movement of water over the levees, and it would cause 20 feet of water in the city. It would be basically what occurred in some neighborhoods after Katrina.
Among the conditions that made New Orleans so susceptible to flooding, at least half the city is at or below sea level. Adding to the threat, because of the loss of wetlands and coastal erosion, New Orleans had lost some of its natural protection, and the Gulf was getting closer every year. And in 2005, as Katrina approached, it was protected by hundreds of miles of levees and flood walls that even at the time, many scientists thought were too low. One of those scientists was Ivar van Heerden, then the co-director of Louisiana State University's Hurricane Center.
We did point out on many, many occasions that those levees are made in some places of soft soil, and there's a good chance they could erode and there could be failures. But their response to us was, these are, you know, federal levees built to federal standards. They're not going to fail.
A decade before Katrina, Van Heerden ran computer storm surge models that show the likelihood that the city would flood in a major hurricane. His work got the attention of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA. In 2004, a year before Katrina, the agency funded a disaster simulation exercise called Hurricane Pam. It looked at what would happen if a slow-moving Category 3 hurricane hit New Orleans. It predicted there would be thousands of deaths and that the entire city would be flooded. But when he made his presentation, the South Africa-born Van Heerden says FEMA and other federal agencies didn't seem to recognize the seriousness of the region's vulnerability.
The whole idea was Hurricane Pam was to educate, but there were a lot of federal folk who were just in the back room laughing. You know, I distinctly got the feeling that I was the geek with a strange accent, and that was it.
2005 was one of the busiest hurricane seasons ever recorded. In late August, Katrina blew up in the Gulf of Mexico, quickly reaching Category 5 with 175 mile-per-hour winds and pushing a massive storm surge. On Saturday, 2 days before the storm hit, New Orleans mayor declared a state of emergency and called for a voluntary evacuation. By the next morning, former Times-Picayune reporter Mark Schlefstein recalls Louisiana Governor Kathleen Blanco made it mandatory.
But beginning Saturday night, the roads were completely full up until about midnight. Then it dropped off until about 6 a.m. in the morning, and then the roads were full again.
All lanes of the interstates leaving New Orleans were open to outgoing traffic, and an estimated 80% of the population got out before the storm. But that left at least 100,000 people in the city, many without cars or resources to get out on their own. A plan to use school and city buses to pick up residents and help them evacuate never materialized. The city designated its indoor stadium, the Superdome, as the shelter of last resort. Ivor Van Heerden.
On the night before landfall, there were about 12,000 people at the Superdome. There was enough food and water for them for 48 hours. Once the levees broke, everything changed because people were being rescued.
Katrina weakened before landfall, but still hit the area near Louisiana's Mississippi border on August 29th as a Category 3 storm. Most of the deaths and damage were caused by a massive storm surge, nearly 28 feet in towns on the Mississippi coast. In New Orleans, the storm surge strained the levee system. Schlefstein says it soon became apparent that the city and surrounding areas were flooding.
We got reports from photographers at about 9:30 in the morning that they were seeing people on top of houses in St. Bernard Parish and in the lower Ninth Ward.
Katrina's storm surge caused major breaks to levees and flood walls in several areas. Coast Guard and Navy helicopters rescued hundreds of people stranded on roofs, heard here on a TV broadcast.
Okay, here, we've got a rescue in progress. The United States Coast Guard just pulled this man off the roof and now hoisting him up to the Sikorsky Coast Guard helicopter.
In the lower Ninth Ward, overtopping caused a flood wall to collapse along the Industrial Canal, a major waterway. As Katrina's wind and rain pummeled the city, Robert Green and his family, like many others, were stranded on a rooftop, fighting for their lives.
Our house floated with us on the roof of it. As other houses were hitting these gigantic oak trees and breaking up, we were able to continue straight up the street to a point where we wound up being tossed in the water. And at the end of that, my mother lay dead. She had so much water in her lungs that she didn't make it.
Green's mother and granddaughter were among the estimated 1,400 people who died in the storm. Hundreds were rescued from rooftops and flooded homes and brought to the Superdome, where they quickly overwhelmed the available resources. With so much of the city flooded, including the barracks of the National Guard, aid was slow to arrive. In New Orleans, many felt the city had been abandoned, and there was an air of desperation and looting. It soon became apparent federal authorities didn't understand the seriousness of the situation. On NPR's All Things Considered, 3 days after the storm, John Burnett reported on the desperate conditions at a makeshift shelter at New Orleans Convention Center.
There are, I estimate, 2,000 people living like animals inside the city convention center and around it. They've been there since the hurricane. There's no food. There's absolutely no water. There's no medical treatment, no police and no security. And there are two dead bodies.
In an interview with All Things Considered host Robert Siegel, Department of Homeland Security Secretary Michael Chertoff indicated he was the first he'd heard about it.
I have not heard a report of thousands of people in the convention center who don't have food and water.
During the Bush administration, FEMA, once a cabinet-level agency, was placed under the Department of Homeland Security. The director, a political appointee with no expertise in emergency management, resigned 2 weeks after the storm. Mary Landrieu, then serving as Louisiana's Democratic senator, says FEMA clearly was unprepared. Looking back now, she says it was difficult to get the agency to recognize the need and level of destruction from Katrina.
Katrina was horrifying and tragic. People drowned trying to swim away from their homes, or drowned in their attics, or drowned in nursing homes because no one came to evacuate them. Died in hospitals because the electricity went off and there were no backup generators.
Following the storm, a White House study found a host of failures within FEMA and DHS in preparing and responding to the storm. Among them, top decision makers were unfamiliar with their national response plan. Also, FEMA field offices were understaffed, and nearly all the top positions were filled by acting directors. At least until Katrina, President Bush looked to downgrade the role of FEMA in responding to natural disasters. Landry says that's a mistake she's worried that's now being repeated by President Trump, who's proposed eliminating the agency. Katrina, Landry says, is a reminder the federal government can't walk away from its role in overseeing the response to natural disasters.
What President Trump wants to do, his view of eliminating FEMA, that isn't the answer. The answer is to think carefully about what worked at Katrina.
20 years after Hurricane Katrina, New Orleans still hasn't fully recovered. Many people who left never came back. The city has about 3/4 of the population it had before the storm. Some areas in the French Quarter, the Garden District, uptown, look fine. In many other neighborhoods, vacant houses and overgrown lots remind people of a disaster that happened before many of them were born. That may be another lesson from the storm. As difficult and costly as it is to prepare for a hurricane, wildfire, or flood, it's easier and cheaper than the recovery. With producer Marisa Peñalosa in New Orleans, I'm Greg Allen, NPR News.